Jerry Servant. Today's date is April 23rd, 1975. The time is 4 p.m. I will be interviewing Ed Perlberg of Standish, Michigan. Some of the topics include his first memories of Standish, the town and outlying areas, some of the people in the area in depth, some of his childhood recreation and education memories. Also included are if there were any big disasters in the town of Standish, and also if there was any logging in that general area. Okay, maybe you could start with just some of the general information on the lumber mills in the place.
Well, Jerry, actually, very general terms, the pre-1900 era was the lumber era in Standish. I'm not well versed in the lumber woods, except that I'm aware that in the late 1900s they were still housing the horses over the summer in Standish, and my grandfather, who came from Scotland in 1894, lived in the Stirling area, and then he moved down here in a few years. And I guess in today's area he'd have been a veterinarian, cared for the horses for a large mill that operated out of Standish. And he cared for those, he took care of those in the summertime when they moved back here before they went in the woods in the winter. Pond that you might refer to, or the dam, or where the bridge crosses 23, was a dam. It's been a dam for... Well, Standish has not reached its 100th birthday. So there was a village by the name of Granton before that. The settlement goes deeper than that, but the city starts in the 1884. There was a stave mill here. There weren't large lumber mills here at that time. The lumber mills were farther in the eastern part of the county where the rivers were larger. The Rifle River, of course, was a big log river. There was a pond where the logs were ponded in the Pine River, right just directly west of the railroad bridge in Standish. In effect, there was a larger population, as I recall, right about that time than there was in the early 1900s. It actually dropped off. I would be more familiar with the era from 1900 on, both from listening and personal knowledge. We were starting in the farming in the 1900s. The lumber was gone, basically, in this area. And my grandfather arrived here in 1895. Actually, he was a German immigrant who was walking a cow from Flint to Wasabo. He worked in the brick mills in Flint, found a good clay here and came into Standish. That's how the family got here, to make brick. He hauled all the brick for that, to what is very familiar and known as the Flatiron Building in Saginaw. Part of it has just been torn down. It was hauled from Standish by wagon in the early 1900s. The agriculture, of course, it was a matter of, in those days, in the early 1900s, of people actually clearing the land that they lived on, that they're working today. Peter Kelch, he's an 80-some-year-old farmer, a very successful farmer here, 2.5 miles west of town. Peter came here from the Ohio area and cleared his land. He cleared the stumps off the land. You can hear, I can remember my grandfathers, they all talked about clearing land and stumping land. Dynamite was a big selling item here when I was a boy. Actually, we sold dynamite in hardware stores until it became prohibitive from safety regulations, but people dynamited stumps right up to World War II when the bulldozer became into being. So we were still clearing land when I was a boy. Speaking about the advent of agriculture, it would have been the early 30s in the Depression. A group of businessmen got together and helped subsidize the hiring of a county agent, which is your county agent today under the federal program that is funded. I don't recall the name of it, but it should be very easy to secure. It slips me at the moment. Smith Hughes, I believe, but I won't say for sure. Anyway, it was the county agent, as we all know it today. And the man came in and was given a desk in my father's office to get started to bring a help in learning agricultural technology in this area. And these were just plain farmers, and this same Peter Kelts that I'm referring to came in here when he was in his 70s to invest in an industrial park with the comment that he would like to do something to help the business. And the people of my father's era had brought in a county agent that taught him the first thing he really knew about farming. So that was, would have been in the late 20s, early 30s. So you see, we aren't, the sophistication is we were basically agriculture in a very limited way from the lumber era to the 30s. It grew and didn't change a lot. We had all gravel roads. I can't tell you, but the pavement down Cedar Street Standish isn't terribly old. It's older than, I'm 53 and it's older than I am. But that was the only pavement in the city of Standish except that was the only pavement in the city of Standish in 1925. It was that little stretch of Cedar Street. There may have been on 23. Then came, the opening of this area is the road. And the road came through here as a gravel road, 23, which was then old M10. But the road started coming, stepping one back farther, I can, have pictures out here in the morgue that my dad can remember, and my dad was 78, died 4 years ago, so that's not too long ago, of road bees south of town on that busy four-lane highway that you've traveled all your life, of road bees, of farmers with the old scoops. Have you ever seen the pictures where they move dirt with just a plain old scoop behind two horses?
Horses, yeah.
That's where they built that road in my father's lifetime.
Strange, it isn't so long ago.
It is not that long ago. I can remember it as a very small boy back in the days when I presume it was a Model T or an old Chevrolet or something. But if you know where the curves are south of Standish, the famous curves.
Yeah.
That road where you make your first curve, you're right. That road, the road came straight through where you see the gravel road. Do you remember where Larry Raymond used to live down? Anyway, it came straight north and then it went straight east for about a quarter mile and then went straight down the west side of the railroad tracks. That was old M10. That was the road to the north. And I can remember that when I was 5, 6 years old. That was a gravel road with short angle turns. Because there used to be a corner out here called O'Keefe's Corner where the cars tipped over. It was one of those big, when the cars kept turning in a corner and made a big bank in it, and as they got up on the top like in a racetrack, they tipped over and dropped off in this ditch. Now, I can remember coming over to Bay City as a youngster and seeing cars in the O'Keefe Corner ditch. It was just a common everyday occurrence. Somebody turned over on that corner. Now, that is in my lifetime when I'd been 5, 6 years old, which had been around the mid-20s. That pavement, that curves, was one of the biggest political deals ever pulled in Standish. The road was obviously supposed to go somewhere else. And a man that goes down in history out here by the name of Gordon Welcome, who functioned for years as the colonel of an Oscoda. He wore a red shirt and always wore a red shirt. And I forget the color of his tie and his sport coat. And nicknamed himself after that Standish, Colonel Welcome. And the only colonelcy that Gordon Welcome ever had was the one he endowed upon himself. But he worked through then Governor Sleeper, and they got this road made in those famous curves into Standish, which brought into our 23, which brought the gasoline alley in here, which it should have been somewhere else. We could have been a Pintani in those days where you wouldn't just slip by the side. He brought that across that railroad track, and I guess you'd have to say kill a lot of people before you're all doing it. That brought the road into here. In 1929, the road made its first bend north, and an old kitty corner that you take home every day. Well, you don't go, if you go to Winnowin, you used to go to Omer. That was a right angle turn. There were four right angle turns to Omer. This goes up to 1929. The a straight pavement was put through there. And then I went to try to pin down a couple of years later, the pavement went on north 77 into Sterling, which used to go up by the Stanley Sterling High School on a kitty corner, on a straight corner road. That's the way that went. That opened up this area. It brought people up here on dirt roads. I can remember as a kid, the deer hunt came by the county courthouse.
What was that located at?
Right by the courthouse, right where it is, right where it is. You came down the same four-lane church. That road was paved. That road and Cedar Street were paved. That was the only pavement in town until 38. But with the advent of those roads, and then there was a man by the name of Sims. You know the Sims Ranch?
Yeah.
Mr. Sims is a young attorney. A government attorney is the one who broke Standard Oil. He won the case against Standard Oil. Mr. Sims owned some land up here. It made him famous. He bought that land and then induced the state of Michigan to build the Shoreline Road, right straight through Sims Ranch. Not a, it was greedy but good, but he did induce, in this area, all of the leading politicians in Michigan met at Sims Ranch for a pheasant hunting party every fall. I would bet you for 15 years. Every top politician over there, if you did, could have dropped a bomb on that old Sims Ranch building that burned down here about 4 or 5 years ago, the Sims Ranch house. If you'd have dropped a bomb at a certain time, you'd have cleaned out every prominent politician in the state of Michigan. If you would have guessed of Mr. Sims at that point, you'd have certain people around here. He was very close to Governor Sleeper. He stayed close to Governor Grosbeck. And it was definitely his influence and his enticing people in Lansing to be of to take an interest in this road, which put 23 down the shoreline. It used to go through Twining, down the back country over to Tawas, and go back out in the middle, and go, but never near the shoreline. It's an entirely new road, the Huron Shoreline Road, which, that opened up the tourist. Then, of course, it was in the middle of the Depression. It didn't grow that fast at that time, but it did grow. We had traffic from that point on. That was the height of the deer herd. In the 30s is when the deer herd was at its peak. And then people who didn't have any money in those days, they could still go deer hunting. That changed the character too. And then that brought the tourism to the north. It brought the famous slogan of Standish, where the summer trails divide, which has been dropped years ago when recreation went year-round. But it was a... It brought the trading post. If you recall, the trading post was a local man went hunting up in Canada, saw a Hudson Bay trading post up in deep way up in Canada, sketched a replica, sketched us what he'd seen, and brought it home and built the trading post as a replica of a Hudson Bay trading post.
That's where the restaurant is?
It's where the restaurant is now.
Where it used to
burn it. Now, the only thing that's left of the original setup is what is the sporting goods and beer liquor store.
That's
the one that burned
one by itself. Yeah.
But there was the whole log structure.
Yeah,
that was built in about 30, right in the midst of the, right in the depths of the Depression.
Remember, that burned down just a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. About 3 years ago. That restaurant was probably the best-known restaurant in northern Michigan for 15 years. One of the founders, his son ran the restaurant, and it hit some tough times after that, right at the middle of World War II. He was killed in the deer woods in the backseat of a state trooper's car with a bullet, a stray bullet. He was known, and that restaurant was known, to the office, into Ohio. You understand, this was it made us prominent. This road junction has been the foundation of this community since the day that road came north. That Y at the north end of town. You had to go to central Michigan, you came to the Standish, to go to eastern Michigan, you came to the Standish. To go north from the 3.5 million people in Detroit, to go north, had to go through Standish. John Mackey pulled a lot of them off for several years by diverting the expressway over to 27 from Bay City to Midland. My father used to say the day that they built the expressway on north the way it ought to be, the expressway from Bay City to Claire will be one of the least used expressways in Michigan. He's already proven himself rather accurate. The traffic's back this way, you know it.
Yeah, sure.
The old jam we used to hear about at Bay City, it's gone. Traffic's all flowing north this way, and it's a smaller amount. That built the gasoline alley. At one time, we could seat every resident of the city of Standish on a restaurant seat. I forget, we ran 16, 17 gas stations from a couple of miles south of town to the north city limits. Never became a resident tourist area because we don't have any local tourist attraction. The bay has gone out. It's not good. But this has been an important part of the economy, so I guess you'd say it was lumber, agriculture in the early 1900s, tourism started seriously in 1930, blossomed after the war as people became much more affluent. And then, of course, we never really lost any of it because the expressways came. We just couldn't handle anymore. We had the old traffic jams of ages that hurt us. And then from that era, we have gone, and of course, there was no industry in this area. And I guess if you went lumber, agriculture, tourism. Now, agriculture, I should stop in this area. Agriculture, of course, I guess it's no different here anywhere else. But agriculture was actually rather primitive prior to World War II. I mean, tractors were not a big deal. Look, we sold, one of my early promotions as a young editor was promoting the production of Class A milk in Paranac County. Let's not take $3 a hundred for grade B milk. Let's get milk houses and better barns and improve our entire operation and sell Class A milk. And you can go back in my files and find milk stories were prominent for 10 years. Back in those days, I knew the complicated milk marketing formula and all of the complexities that went along with it, as well as I know school revenue today. Then we've gone all the way through that back into cash cropping. Dairy's way down, as it is everywhere. Then in our fourth era, so to speak, would be the industrial park, which we had done. We had nothing in 63. We had struggled. I've been here, active here since 46. And we gambled and found a neighboring company that needed to rent a building for about 8 months, and we gambled and built them a building bigger than they needed and rented to them for 8 months, and they're still here, and it's gone from 16,000 square feet to 80,000 square feet. We've since built two buildings and two additions for another plant for a total of 87,000 square feet. The custom tube went in and it was started in at about 7,000 square feet. It's now about 30,000 square feet. The Wheeland Davco building, which is now American Hoist, is up around 45,000 square feet. And then we put in the new industrial park, 83 acres with underground wiring, sewer, water, blacktop street, and the whole bit. Actually, we built it up to the point that the industry pays 14% of taxes in the city of Standish. Without industry here today to do exactly what we're doing, people's taxes would be 3.5 mils more than they are. So, rather. History-wise, economically, I believe that, in very brief form, covers the city of Standish.
What do you remember, like, back, things like when you were in school, what was the, like, you know, elementary, or if you remember like that, you know, very vividly, what was the town like, and like, what kind of businesses did you
have? The town? Yes. When I was in grade school, Kid 23 was a two-lane road down the middle out there. When I was in grade school, there was Cedar Street, and there was a gravel road to the high, what you know as the elementary school up there. That was the only pavement. The Cedar Street was basically here. There was nothing on 23. When I was a youngster, there wasn't a building out there except a station. And some in the hotel, which was the summer trail in the hotel. And then there was nothing north of the hotel. Well, there was the building, the first block north of Cedar Street on 23 was in. And these blocks were as they are. Actually, there were more buildings now. There's been a couple of buildings come down. There was a big fire in 26. I can remember coming up town in the morning to see that it burned out the entire area from the bakery to the corner where Mueller's store is. One of the many fires. I should go back. Fires, we can think of them today. We call them the friendly fires today, and we look at some old towns and say they didn't have a fire. Our buildings are getting old now, but for years we did not have the old buildings that the communities have. Ours all burned. Two big hotels up there in the corner where the two drugstores are right now. in that area where the old bank was. Those were big hotels. They wood hotels. They burned. The only building that hasn't burned is the place right around from the bakery to where the bank was. There's one building in there that was built that never burned down. But everything else is burned. Everything else. The right over here across the street from us is, I guess that's the original building. But everything else is burned. So we, now we're getting old once again, but we aren't as old as some towns because they burn. And, but I don't remember those hotels. What is there now, I recall. Maybe they've been remodeled and all, but they've been basically, those structures were there. This building that we're in was built in 31. It depended on, this was going to be a bank. The Depression came along, they didn't build a bank. We got the biggest footing in our coal, the old coal bin we had here, but anybody's ever seen it, was the vault for bank, and it became our coal bin. The school was the school, you know, as the, well, I can remember the school, and all it was the one that's about to be torn down, Jerry, the elementary building. It's just been approved for replacement. The original little building in the middle, if you remember looking at that building, there's about a four-room structure up and down. That's all that was there when I was a youngster. But in 29, the gymnasium was built. Now that gymnasium is, you will never believe it, but that little gym, you ever play in that?
No,
you ever
in
that little elementary gym?
Yeah.
Ever been in that? That held tournaments.
Wow.
That was the gymnasium in northern Michigan for about 4 years. There was no sitting room in it, but it was the gymnasium for northern Michigan. It had a floor, you didn't have to run into a hot stove. In high school, I played basketball in Whittemore, and the top floor of the Rollaway Inn, where the Whittemore kids, I think I probably told you when we were working here, the Whittemore kids had that beat, there was a rod going across the middle of the building, kind of hold it together, and if you intercepted the ball or something, you were changing directions, those characters knew where that rod was, and they could be going full tilt, they'd reach up and grab that damn rod, they could turn it around a dime and be going back the other way while you were just looking at them, you know. But we played upstairs in there. We played in a building that I never played in. I remember watching Wayne Sterling at an old potbelly stove in the corner. I played in the gym in Tawas. I've got a scar in the back of my leg right now where I backed into a hot steam radiator. It was on the out-of-bounds line. The gymnasium at Beaverton, the stage came up, was you out-of-bounds. When you hit the stage, you were out-of-bounds, which made it a little tough on a drive. Gladwin had the old, where they started the camper. There's a round-top building over there. If you didn't know that one and shoot with the roof, you hit the roof every time. And it was the biggest floor in the area that had this funny roof. And if you shot right, you could find. But if you weren't used to it, you could hit the ceiling pretty easy because it was a pretty good size floor. This was the, and I'm talking when I was in high school in the 35-9. We didn't have the gym. The best gym we played in was what's now the old West Branch Community Building. It was built while I was in high school. You played football on any field you could find. I can't think of any other. I keep thinking of that. If you say, you were as a youngster, Mr. Sivy over here at the bank, who's the bank president, he was enough older than me that we could go camping. If Jack and a fellow that worked here would take us, we camped overnight to where alongside the old bear track inn. And below the Whitney Cemetery, and we weren't over there. We were just out in nowhere. That's that thing that you couldn't buy a lot today, but we camped up there. We were out in nowhere. No cottages around, no anything. Of course, you want to remember, and when I was in high school in 35 to 39, that road is now only 10 years old in 39, because Mr. Sims got that road through there after 29. So this would be, we just didn't have the old Point Lookout is real old. They came in there by boat in the late 1800s, cottages from Saginaw. But that was, they didn't reach that side road. They came by boat and by train. But they didn't come by car. So when I'm talking about no cottages, I'm talking about alongside a road that seemed like it had been there ever for me when I was a kid. But as I think, talking to you today, that road's only been there about 7-8 years when we first started camping up there. So see, it's just brand new, virgin territory. Uh, anything else you can, I was trying to think of anything else you might be interested in.
What kind of businesses do they have, like in the town or like in
virtually
the
same.
There's not even
basically the business founders are not very different. The Mueller store was Bernthal's, the independent office. My father started working here when he was 17 years old in 19, before World War II, as a printer's devil. Went to school to come here to work for printer's devil. So this, there was a newspaper. It was down the street here in the building. The hardware, the Standish hardware, there's been a hardware there from time immemorial, I guess. The other hardware's been there for ages. It was there when I was a boy. The drugstore, that drugstore, had been there when I was a youngster. The grocery stores have changed dramatically, and there have been a lot of new ones. But basically, these were the businesses. You had a couple of drugstores, a chain store and a local store, and maybe a couple small grocery stores. And you had the big Mueller department store. You had a couple of hardware. We had more jewelers than we got today. We had the funeral chapel was next door, the big one down the street. They were basically the same. You know, we were only 800-900 in 1930, and we're 1180 today. I mean, there hasn't been dramatic changes in the business structure. It's been an excellent business community, but it's not been a large one. So basically the same, except for the car agencies are big. Everything is basically bigger. But the assortment of businesses are not too great, except there are less appliance dealerships, there are less farm dealerships. Not when I was a boy, but they were about the same numbers when I was a boy. They came up and went down.
Yeah.
Actually, there were more when I was a boy than there is today. It's become a big business. You buy tractors for $500, now you buy a combine for $38,000, $45,000. So there aren't many room for many businesses.
Now I just read always following paper and stuff, but instead it just became a crime problem. I just wonder, back then, was it rougher, did you have more problem?
No, I didn't have any. Had a murder way back then, I haven't had one since. Crime is most definitely a bigger problem today than it was then. The jail here, and I've been reporting around here since, for 28 years, regularly. And there have been days when I would up and check the jail pick and I wouldn't find anybody in jail. And I've had to change my sentence that just being in jail isn't important. I can't bother taking the time to get all of them in. You got room for 16, 19 people up there, and we're overcrowded sometimes. And, the building's only 20 years old. I have known Circuit Court meets here every 3 months. I mean, it convenes every 3 months. There's sessions in between. But on the court calendar, there's 4 cases to a page, and I've been printing court calendars for 28 years, and I can tell you the day when there wasn't a page of criminal cases in that court document. And last month there were 38.
38 pages?
38 cases.
8 cases, wow.
Just, there's two things. There's an awful lot of, everybody takes it to court. Goes to court, there's a lot bigger problems. And once they get to court, they get an attorney so it stays on the docket. In fact, we have an OJP around here that I have a famous story of a drunk, old town drunk. Finally got put in jail, and they asked Bill Sweet, he said, how'd I be in jail? He said, I don't mind jail, but I could have done without that goddamn sermon. Which is just about it, the OJP. I mean, he's. He was kind of a law unto himself. And crime is, of course, we had petty vandalism, as everybody's had from there. And I can remember that when a building was vacant, I think I may have been involved in a terrible scandal in the neighborhood when that vacant elevator, all the windows broke out of it. Well, that's the type of vandalism that's gone on since day one. And the building was open. For some reason, little boys can't help but throw stones through. We never had. The biggest vandalism we had was the mess created on Halloween, which was